she's eating pizza on the street, just like me.
Hey, he's got a pizza too. Yeah, we're breaking convention.
Gotta respect it. Big respect.
If I'm hungry, I'm gonna have a taste. This guy knows what I'm talking about.
She's gonna have indigestion. I'm gonna have indigestion. I'll give her a little wave.
Oh, he's giving me a wave. I should give him a little wink. Hope he doesn't take it the wrong way. Nah, he knows it's a pizza wink.
Oh yeah, little pizza wink. Classy. I'm on cloud nine. This is lovely.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Monday, January 30th, 2023. I'm J.E. Skeets, back in the Classic Factory, and alongside me, as always, that's Tass Mellis.
Podcast listeners, this is for you.
Next to Tassie is the bearded woman, Top Shot Hot Boy, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o!
Hey-o! And last but not least, making the magic happen, super producer, JD.
Hello.
There he is. Here we are, JD. How was the trip to Memphis with the boys?
Oh, it was incredible.
Yeah?
International Blues Challenge. They had no business being there at all.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Out of their league?
They were way out of their league. It was like if the Savannah Bananas showed up at the World Series.
Huh. So entertaining.
Very entertaining. I was very entertained, but...
By everybody else.
I thought they did a great job.
Good.
But, you know, it's a blues challenge, and you guys, you have some really serious musicians, and they were incredible, blew me away. And then Mongo Pretty gets up and does Pour Some Sugar on Me in the middle of a blues festival. So I loved it.
Right.
People loved it. Actually, there was like a nice reprieve. It was like a palate cleanser.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I'm tired of all this blues.
It's like,
music.
God damn it, let's get some happiness in here. So it was great. Yeah, okay. It was fun.
All right, well, welcome back. Great to have everybody here.
You.
Shout out to the stream team joining us live on YouTube. We love it. Like the vid. Subscribe if you haven't. Comment away. Get your No Dunks merch over at nodunks.com for your hoodies and your t-shirts and your mugs and whatever else we got up there. Get your tickets to our No Dunks live show in Salt Lake City. It is coming up. It's right around the corner. It's almost February. I said January 30th, but it's starting to feel like January 87th.
It already feels like February to me.
Yeah, right? So yeah, February 17th, Friday night, 8 p.m. at the Urban Lounge. No Dunks Live. We can't wait. It's been 3 years since we've done a live show, so we're going to have a lot of fun that night. The tickets to buy, that link is available in the show notes here on YouTube or in the podcast description as well. So just click on that. Get your ticket if you live in Salt Lake City or the area or you're going for All-Star Weekend. And hey, once you're done with today's classic, I'm already calling it a classic, check out the brand new episode of Is This Good with these two rapscallions. Yeah, Tass and Trey joining Matty O and JD to debate non-consensual Venmo requests, correcting your friends, the classic Schumann hashtag, well, actually, I guess, and bribing bouncers to skip a line. Those are just a few of the topics that you guys got into. As we just straight up disappeared or our monitor went out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Who knows?
You know what's been going on?
That was nice.
See, this guy hasn't been pressing the ones and twos lately.
It's all Eshwa. Yeah.
That was a nice fade to black. Yeah, well, I got to admit.
Thank you.
It was very dramatic.
Thank you and good night.
Yeah. I did not know if our monitor went out or you literally just decided the show was over. Yeah.
I was wondering what that button did. Now I know. FTP. FTB is what it says. So there you go.
Fade to black.
Fade to black.
Okay, checks out.
All right. So Is This Good? It's available now, actually, on YouTube. Wherever you download and listen to podcasts, just search for Is This Good, Matty O, and hear the guys debate some of these topics.
That was a fun show.
You had a good one?
I
haven't listened
to that. That was fun.
I had a good one with you, too.
I had a good one with you, too.
That's how that smiley picture turned out so good.
Of us really good.
I did see
next
that.
To each other, cheesing.
Did you take that day of?
We took that right after. We had such a good show. We're like, let's capture this moment to promote it to the people.
Oh, excellent. Well, great. Okay, NBA weekend winners and losers here on a Monday podcast. But before we do that, we had a bunch of wedgies to show everyone. Three of them over the weekend. We had two on Friday night. Grayson Allen got it started with like the little fadeaway mid-range jumper.
Good one.
Yeah, it's a wedgie. You gotta like it. Even though it's Grayson Allen, you just gotta like it.
That's right. Then SGA, this was like minutes later, if I remember correctly, maybe 10 minutes later. He got fouled. but it was on the shot attempt, so we count that one. Nice close up there.
SGA, short shorts, always like he's got a wedgie action.
That's right. And then on Saturday, I want to say this is maybe the deepest shot attempt to result in a wedgie of the season. Eric Gordon far out there from the three-point line, and he stuck it hard. So that's 31 wedgies on the season. Come in bunches, as we always say. And yeah, the pace now, it's ticked back up to 52. So good stuff there. Three wedgies on the weekend. Okay, but let's get to our winners of the NBA weekend. We're going to start with Trey Kirby. I feel like there are a number of nominees, a number of directions we could go. Where do you want to start?
There are a number of nominees, but everybody knows who the winner of this weekend is. It's Joel Embiid, because he took statement Saturday to a new level on Saturday. Joel Embiid had a matchup with Nikola Jokic. First time they're going head-to-head this season, and you could tell that Embiid had this one circled. Outplayed Jokic pretty soundly in a big national TV spot. 47 points, 18 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. Sixers were down 15 at halftime. After half, Embiid had an entire game. 28 points, 7 rebounds, 3 assists. You know, prior to 2023, that's an incredible full game right there. But this is the best kind of stuff you can get in the regular season. Two MVP candidates who actually care and who are actually trying to make a point. Embiid was attacking from the jump. I thought Jokic was too. He took the first shot for Denver. Embiid comes right back and won on Jokic for the first Sixers possession. He stayed in attack mode all night. He was using the speed advantage, I thought. I thought it was kind of a point to play downhill in the pick and roll rather than the short roll that Embiid usually goes for. If Jokic laid off of him, that easy mid-range jumper from Embiid was money, but if Jokic stepped out, it was a blow-by from Embiid. Had the sick crossover to a reverse dunk in the third quarter. Could have been a nothing highlight that we just kind of gloss over and mention, but Embiid just kept going into the fourth quarter. Eventually got an MVP moment, hitting the step-back three to give him 47 points. I had a weird experience with this over the weekend because I watched the game on Saturday. Didn't have a chance to listen to Zach Lowe's podcast with Ramona Shelburne until yesterday on Sunday, and at the end of that, they're talking about previewing this game and how important it is to Embiid to have an MVP moment, because Jokic had one against him last season.
Yeah,
he went out there and he did it, and that was awesome to see him hit that last three to give him 47 points and maybe change the conversation a little bit around these guys. That being said, the game changer in this game was PJ Tucker. PJ Tucker guarding Nikola Jokic in the second half. Joel Embiid basically getting to roam and just mess things up at the rim. He was there as a great rim protector. The rebounding was nice. They were definitely throwing off Jokic's rhythm, baiting him into turnovers. In the second half, Jokic went 2 of 5, scored 8 points, had 4 assists, and 6 turnovers. You don't see that from Big Honey all that often. So, incredible game from Joel Embiid, and definitely one that people will remember if he goes on to win the MVP at the end of the season.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Doc Rivers to make that change there in the second half. PJ Tucker, 6-5, going against Nikola Jokic. And yeah, I think that move just made everybody a little bit more bouncy with the Sixers. They're watching ready instead of just allowing Joel Embiid to guard Jokic. Embiid was ready to pounce. I mean, you could see him. He was bouncing back and forth. He was guarding Aaron Gordon in the corner. And Jokic, I think he was just sort of caught in between. Should I shoot? I mean, I am literally 7 inches taller than this guy. I could just shoot. But he only shot 5 times, as you said there, Trey. He was 2 of 4 when Tucker was the primary defender on him. And it was clear, as you said, he was ready to make a statement.
Yes.
That was very, very clear. And I think when we talk about Rivals Week, this game kind of floated under the radar because you don't think of the Sixers versus the Nuggets as rivals. But this was obviously put on Saturday because Jokic got to go up against Embiid, the two-time MVP. And like his teammate, Embiid, two-time runner-up MVP, just like James Harden, and eventually he won it. And I'm sure Embiid wants to win one, whether it's this year or next year. But whatever he tells you, like after the game, you know, classic stuff. I'm not trying to destroy Nikola Jokic out there. Obviously.
They respect each other, though. That's why I like.
Oh,
them,
they
this
do.
Matchup these two.
Yeah, Embiid respects Jokic. He respects Giannis in all their all his interviews. But he wanted to kill him.
Yeah,
that's for sure. And that's what made it fun. It was Rivals Week. a success.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to get to that a little bit later here. Rivals Week was incredible. I wish every week was Rivals Week in the NBA.
So does Embiid.
Yeah, right. I know.
That's perfect for him.
Man, yeah. This, too, I love that it was that Saturday marquee game, you know, the lone game on at that time at 3 p.m. Eastern start, I guess, and these two going at it, and them coming back, Philly, and the nice coaching move there from Doc putting PJ squarely on Jokic in the second half. Harden doing his thing, too, like just another 17-13. You know, we were debating, like, is this guy going to make the All-Star team? Is he obviously played enough? Is he deserving? I mean, they're 20-4, the Sixers are, in their last 24 games. 20-4, and correct me if I'm wrong, when we did our tiers podcast a couple weeks ago, or like, you know, maybe 10 days ago at this point, whatever it was, we did have Philly up in the championship contender tier, right? That's good.
I think so.
Because I feel like after this one, more people would be more inclined to also bump them up into that tier. I feel like they got the attention of a lot of people on that ABC game with Embiid's monster game, beating the best team in the West in the Nuggets with this streak that they have going there. So, hey, good job by us.
And 2.5 games back of Boston. And I mention that because that increases Joel Embiid's chances of winning MVP if they get to that to that one seed, which is, it's not out of reach.
No, not at all.
By any means.
Great, great game, that one there on Saturday. Okay, what do you got for a win of the weekend?
Well, then on Sunday, another guy who's won MVP. He went out against the Pelicans. Just a Sunday game. This is not part of Rivals Week. Rivals
no,
Week.
Rivals, it ended on Saturday night.
It literally ended on Saturday. The NBA saying, we're not going up against the NFL, AFC, NFC championship games. Smart, actually. But Giannis, he saw what happened with Joel. He saw what happened with Jokic. And he said, don't you forget about me. Yeah.
You think Giannis knows that song?
Yeah. Last finals MVP from the Eastern Conference. Right. Yeah, I think it's... Would that song have played at Blues Fest?
I would say
did
no.
Did you hear it?
I did not hear it.
Well, you never know. There's a lot of things
there's
happening.
There's a lot
pour
of
some
venues.
Sugar on me.
There's a lot of people playing. It's possible.
You think it's just possible wondering. That was played over the weekend?
No,
in
I don't think it's don't possible. Think so. If anyone anyway. Was going to play it, it was going to be my kid's band, and they did not play it.
So. Right. Anyways, 50 points from Giannis Antetokounmpo on Sunday versus the Pelicans. He gave it to Jonas Valanciunas. First couple minutes, just gave it to Jonas with a monstrous dunk, and then you could see Jonas start to back up and backpedal a little bit. But Giannis was giving it to Jonas. Giannis and Jonas going at each other. He started dancing around Jonas after that monstrous dunk on him with the Euro steps as he's wont to do, and then that made Jonas hesitant for sure. He started bringing up the ball off the board and started dancing and dribbling through everybody. He used the mid-range. He used it all. He looked great. He had 44 late in this game, and he knocked down 2 3-pointers. That's not fair. Yes,
shouldn't be allowed to
should
do
not.
That.
Yeah, he hit 3 threes in this game. He's only hit 29 threes this season. But all in all, he was Shaq out there to me. He is the modern-day Shaq, and that's why Shaq says Giannis is the man, because he is relentless. That is the word. We talk about Joel Embiid.
I was just going to say, is week. Embiid not the modern-day Shaq in
no.
a weird way, too?
He's Oppo. Shaq goes. I know Embiid obviously took like Shaq took games off, you know, at times.
Sure.
So Embiid's got that, but Giannis is a little bit more fierce. You know, Embiid's a little more finesse. So the fierce part, the going at the rim part, he has added the finesse game. I don't want to just say the old James Harden line that he said a few years ago. Oh, Giannis is just a guy who dunks all the time. If I was 7 feet, I could do that. Mm-hmm. No, he's got incredible skills. Again, bringing it off the board, dancing around them. 20 of 26 in this game. 20 of 26, only 7 free throws. So that's why he's the modern Shaq. He was 7 of 12 from the line, just like Shaquille O'Neal used to do. He also had 13 and 4 assists, career high 55 earlier this month. The good thing about Giannis and the Bucks, though, they haven't had a good offense all season. It's been dragging. Mainly because Giannis had to carry the whole thing, and Chris Middleton has been out. But 130 points in 5 of their last 7 games. That's a nice number. Right. So they're starting to come along there. And, yeah, Giannis wants to let it be known that he's pretty good, too.
He's still in the conversation. He's still at the table. Do we think Embiid has he's grabbed the menu at the MVP table from Jokic? That he's sort of in control, at least in terms of... ordering an appetizer or two?
I say no.
No, you say no. So he's just squarely beside
Jokic. He's there.
Okay. What do you think?
I don't know. He's at least perusing the menu. He wants to speak up. You know, you're thinking, yeah, we're going to all be splitting dishes, but maybe Joel Embiid wants to order his own here because Sixers have been balling. Yeah. Hottest team in the league in the last 20 games. Embiid's leading the league in scoring. Yeah. Just had this monster game against Jokic. At least let him have the menu for 5 minutes.
Yeah,
here.
Let
him put in the order this week.
Yeah, he said, "Can I see that? Let me see that. Like, I trust you to order, but let me just see, and maybe we'll call a waiter over and get some recommendations or something like that." I'm with you on that. Right now, a lot of season still left, but Giannis is definitely at the table. Guy goes out, throws up a 50, no problem. Okay, I would like to give a winner of the weekend to the Minnesota Timberwolves, who on Friday and Saturday night picked up two wins, solid wins, and they were very similar how they happened. Friday night, Anthony Edwards. He scores 13 of his 25 in the third quarter. That pivotal third quarter. You had Russell adding 19. They beat the Grizzlies by 11. Kyle Anderson, really special in that game. He had 23 points in 27 minutes. Then on Saturday night, Anthony Edwards scores 16 of his 34 in that pivotal third quarter. D'Angelo Russell adds 25. And the Wolves hold on to the 117-110 victory over the pesky Kings, who made it a game, got back in it, but the Wolves closed the door. And then in that one, it was Rudy Gobert really, really special. He had 13 and 14 for Minnesota. The Wolves have won 5 of their last 6. They're 11 and 4 in January, which is right there with the Sixers and Nuggets as the best teams in the new calendar year. They're up to 5th in the Western Conference standings because it's so damn, you know, bunched up. I think one game separates the 4th seed from the 9th seed. Game, it's that tight. But Minnesota, I really liked what I saw from them this weekend. And their defense is starting to round into form here. They're the 8th best defense since we've, you know, ticked over to 2023, 12th overall, so it's getting a little bit better. And I hate to keep bringing this up, but you start seeing this team with Ant as your star, your number one guy, Kyle Anderson playing out there, helping, being that glue guy. Gobert starting to find his footing a little bit, at least with these lineups, and it's like, what is going to happen when Karl Anthony Towns comes back to this team? I mean, I know he's a great player. He's an all-star, an all-NBA caliber player, but the fit with Gobert and then the is it my team, your team thing with Anthony Edwards, we'll see here.
I think Karl Anthony Towns is fine with it not being his team, to be honest. I think this takes off pressure. The fit in terms of moving that thing around the paint and how that works with Rudy Gobert, that's a problem. But that's more so, I think, a Carl Rudy problem, not an Anthony Edwards problem. I think he'll be fine.
You know, sure.
Sort of, fading into the background to some degree. Look, he's still going to shoot a lot. But when it comes down to the crunch minutes, I think it's good for both of them. I think it's good for Kat not to be a number one. It's good for Anthony Edwards to be taking the shots because he's the most effective guy.
I'm not that concerned about the alpha dog. Is it my team, your team at the end of games between Ant and Kat? I do start to wonder, is this team better with Kyle Anderson playing in this starting lineup with these guys more minutes and just fits better than a Karl Anthony Towns? Yeah. Despite Karl Anthony Towns being a much, much better play.
Anderson knows how to play with Rudy Gobert. And I think that's kind of huge to keep Gobert interested on offense. Like, Anderson's doing a great job of finding him for lobs, little tic-tac-toe passes. And then, you know, if Gobert is into it offensively, he's also into it defensively. But the main thing is that in this past month, this has 100% become Anthony Edwards' team.
Totally.
Which I think is a difference because when Kat went down, it was a question. Like, they got two number ones on offense. When he comes back, there's a number one and there's a number two because Edwards needs to have the ball. I love to see a House of Highlights branded this duel with De'Aaron Fox. A sick duel.
Ooh, wow.
Straight up sick duel. Fox showed up in the fourth quarter of the duel. Certainly a big time fake comeback from the Kings in this one. But I think Edwards is making a strong case for the All-Star nod here. He just keeps shooting threes, and they keep going in, and I think that has been a huge part for the Wolves here, but I don't know. They're 2 games over .500 now. Edwards has been on fire for a month. I think he might get in.
Yeah, we debated our picks on Friday's Drop podcast. You know, where is Anthony Edwards in this conversation? I think we ultimately decided, like, he's maybe, you know, an injury replacement, or he's not making our original 7 for the reserves there in the West, but yeah, it's getting tougher and tougher. Over his last 7 games, Ant is averaging 30 points per game, 6.6 rebounds per game, 5.3 assists per game, shooting 50 from the floor, 47 from 3, like you were talking about there, Trey, you can't miss, 82 at the line. And he's just the third player in franchise history to have like those type of numbers over a 7-game stretch, which is like, you know, a chunky little stretch. Can you name the other two in Wolves history to have 35 and 5 really over a 7-game span? You don't need to overthink it.
Cat? Right?
No, not Cat.
Kevin Garnett.
Kevin Garnett and one more Kevin.
Love?
Kevin Love. Yeah. There you go. Shout out to Statitudes for that. But yeah, he is this is great timing here for Anthony Edwards All-Star case. I had Joe Mandy texting at us, DMing at us. Hey, where's the love for Ant?
Yeah.
And those Wolves fans want him in there, and Jesus, it's, you know, when you get into him and Fox, or him and a Paul George, or him and a Jaren Jackson Jr., Jesus, it's he might be bumping up that list.
Perfect timing. The ballots had to be in Sunday at midnight by the coaches, so it worked out.
I didn't know that.
It worked out extremely well. Yeah, they have this additional game tonight against the Sacramento Kings Monday night. They have, you know, the old 2-game set, so this one could obviously sway things a little bit in terms of some could have, I should say, in terms of some coaches' ballots, but they won't get it. But a perfect timing from Anthony Edwards. Also played in every single Wolves game in this season.
Yeah.
Where he guys are sitting out.
Does he lead the league in total minutes played? I know Siakam minutes leader in per game, but he missed a big chunk of time.
Probably.
So, yeah, he probably is.
Since he's playing so much. But Kyle Anderson's going to have to be on the floor. The guy is just too good. He's a connector. Maybe that means less D'Angelo Russell minutes, and you're playing a lot of Anthony Edwards sort of as a point guard. But Kyle can play point guard too if Kat's on the floor. They got some options. They got talent.
And Russell's sort of hot right now too. Yeah. Like he does this where he has like a couple weeks stretches where he's like, he looks amazing, and he's on one right now. So good weekend there from the Minnesota Timberwolves. Okay, let's do another round. Who you got?
The Pacers. A very, very unique contract extension for Miles Turner. But I think it's really, really smart for all parties here. It's a unique extension in that they just gave more money this year, 17 additional million this year, because they have the cap space to do it,
right?
Plus 21 next year, and then 20 the year after that. So it's good for all parties, I think, because it keeps the Pacers' options open. Do you want to just have a long-term plan here with Halliburton, Turner, Buddy Hield, and Ben Mathurin? You've got them all signed long-term. Sure, that's good. But you could also trade him, and having him under contract will get you more back because he was going to be a free agent this offseason. So you're going to get more back because it's a reasonable number next year and the year after, 21 and 20. Now, Miles Turner could have got more, definitely longer term contract in the offseason for sure, rather than just 2 years, but he's getting money right here, right now. He can invest it right here this season. People value that. And also, you know, I think he wants a little bit of security as well for his injuries. I think that makes sense. He's still number one on the trade big board at the Athletic. Mm-hmm. So he still could be dealt.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's crazy. I think it's unlikely. I think he should be dropped from the number one spot on the Athletic big board at some point. Just drop him. But he's more tradable now. He'll get more back for the Pacers. But he also gets paid. And it's a unique situation that they had cap room. You can only do it with cap room, and it's that 17 mil. Well, they're unlikely to do something with it.
Right. They have to hit a floor, or otherwise then that money, like, it gets like just dispersed
split
to the
to
rest
everybody.
Of the team. Yeah.
I thought they were at the floor, but I don't know. So I think they just had the room between the floor and the ceiling. But so that
the house?
Yeah, exactly. The room.
Yeah, it's the whole thing.
I guess that's why it's called salary cap room. But anyways, I don't think that money necessarily had to go to anybody, but they could have got some back in a trade. But anyway, it's going to Miles, and again, they can still trade him. So I think everything's on the board.
Okay.
And he's going to make more money. I think he's a smart guy. We found him on our show. I think he's investing it. Yeah, I think he's going
to
invest
we'll
it.
We'll have to check his books.
Yeah.
I
trust
him.
Oh, he does not waste, but he does spend a lot of money on Lego. That's a great point.
now it's not a waste. He can buy all the Legos.
He can build an actual house out of Lego.
Yeah, he can
floor,
build the room,
floor to
ceiling.
Just put money
fill
it
with
in
his
it.
Money, yeah.
Yeah, I wonder how he does get paid. It's interesting. Like how do the dollars come into his account?
Oh, I thought you were thinking he might get paid
deposit?
In Lego.
No. Yeah, no. He definitely gets DD. Direct deposit, but when? So now his salary went to 35 million. It went from 18 to 35. You get paid twice per week throughout the NBA season. But now
I thought I read that he like it does come maybe in one big ass lump here. I don't know. Now, yeah. I'm not sure.
I was reading Danny LaRue's report on The Athletic, but I don't think it.
No,
I don't think the lump comes right away.
Maybe Bobby Marks told me that.
Anyways,
I love when those money guys get a reason to get excited. Eh?
Yeah,
good for them. They're the pros at it. I'm talking Bobby. I'm talking Danny. Like this is something like this. This is rare. Like this renegotiation.
Extremely. Bobby and Danny.
What was the last time it happened? Like Covington in 2017 did something similar.
Classic.
Yeah, everybody remembers that.
That.
Yeah. Anyway.
So
Pacers
tradable.
Didn't have a good weekend on the floor. They lost a couple games, and
they've lost 10 of their last 11. Yeah. Fallen out of the play-in tournament, but winners of the weekend because they got Miles Turner back, and we get another 3 years of Miles Turner trade rumors.
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Well, I think that them losing is. It makes it more palatable to their fans if they want to deal one of these guys, right? Because they're sub 500, not Halliburton. You can't trade him.
No.
Absolutely. Untouchable. Ben Mathurin, untouchable. But if you trade...
Basically Buddy or Miles.
Buddy or Miles, yeah. And again, this Miles contract makes him more appealable to everybody, I think.
That's true.
Trey, let's keep it going here. Who you got for a win of the weekend?
Oh, bit of a scorekeeping controversy over the weekend, Skeetsy. A Redditor named AdMassive6666 posted a nearly 1,600-word manifesto Friday night, Saturday morning that showed Jaren Jackson Jr. gets more blocks and steals during home games by a significant margin.
Yeah.
Basically twice as many blocks at home. People dug up a bunch of questionable plays. Smart guys like Seth Partnow, Kirk Goldsberry, they reviewed those plays.
Yeah.
Debunked the claims.
Yeah. KFC, I saw in on this. Yeah.
Uh-huh. We had former referees explaining how the stats were correctly applied. The league even came out and said, quote, "In order to ensure the integrity of our game statistics, auditors independent of the statisticians on site review all plays and stats decisions in real time during NBA games. If changes are necessary, they are made at that time or following a post-game review. All of the plays questioned in the post on Memphis games were scored consistently within the rules set forth by the NBA statisticians manual." Basically, a little bit of home cooking, but these are legit steals and blocks here, which set the stage for Sunday against the Indiana Pacers. First Grizzlies home game since the Reddit post. Jaren Jackson Jr. goes for 28 points, 8 rebounds, 3 threes, and 5 blocks.
Oh, jeez.
Spicy stuff. Great stuff from Jaren Jackson Jr. when he blocked his fourth shot. Grizzlies play-by-play man Pete Pranica said, "They're real, and they're spectacular."
Good line.
After the game, Jaren Jackson Jr. said, "I didn't read the post, but I beat the case." That's awesome. That's just awesome to go out and have 5 blocks in the first game after people were saying, "Hey, these are questionable blocks here." And honestly, some of them are questionable.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, there's a handful.
Is it a block or is it a steal when a guy goes up for a shot and you tip it down? It's weird stuff. But Jaren Jackson Jr. had an awesome game. And honestly, the Grizzlies needed the win. They'd lost 5 straight on their road trip after winning 11 straight. Grizzlies, though, one of the most hated teams in the league, so this doesn't help. And I think Jaren Jackson Jr. is going to have the most scrutinized blocks in the league for the rest of the season. People are going to be zooming in on these to see when the fingers touched. All I know, he's a great defender.
Yeah.
And his block numbers are ridiculous at home and on the road. Even more so at home, though. So maybe he just plays better.
This was amazing.
Plays harder.
Because the whole, like, the NBA... Reddit post was like, there's a conspiracy to like get Jaren Jackson Jr. a defensive player of the year or not, and they're goosing the numbers and like, are these really blocks or steals and what is going on here? But Ziller pointed out after all of this, after these smart guys looked at everyone and said, well, it's actually pretty good. After the league came out and said, we actually audit all this. After all that, Ziller said in his article this morning, this whole brouhaha was so good for Jaren Jackson Jr. that there is now like a boomerang conspiracy that the Grizzlies planted the original conspiracy in order to draw attention to JJJ's defensive excellence. My God. Mm. So it's like now it was the Grizzlies that actually did this, thinking, oh, I'll get all this attention. Everybody forced to watch all these plays, everyone's like, damn, this guy is good. Oh my God.
Put all I'm saying is we got to check Chris Vernon's IP address compared to MadAssive 666666. Check the IP address. You'll find it's coming. The call is coming from inside Memphis.
This got a lot of people riled up, though. We had so many people DMing us on Instagram and on Twitter, like, you guys got to get ahead of this. I kept responding. I was like, I don't think there's anything here, man. Like, I know it's a hell of a post. A lot of work went into it. I got a feeling there's like maybe a handful of blocks that probably shouldn't have been credited as blocks or steals or whatever. It's like, that's it.
But. Yeah, I see the smarties are saying, you know, like anywhere between 3 and 6 are questionable blocks out of what, 60 plus, I suppose, at home for Jaren Jackson Jr.
Not as
if you don't
glaring.
Think he's a good shot blocker, though, I would say challenge him inside.
Oh, ooh.
Let's see. Let's see.
The numbers are pretty stark, home to away. That's all. That's all there is to it. I mean, that's that's got to be pretty rare for it to be that drastic from
home
to away.
But there was a post going around comparing like steal and block rates for other players at home to the road, and I don't know if it was the same, but it's quite a difference in a couple instances. Mm. You could cherry pick guys to find that. Yeah.
Well, listen, I like the original the original conspiracy theory. I like it. It makes sense. Not enough people know about Jaren Jackson Jr. If somebody within the house, if it's a Vernon or a Whitaker, I would buy it. I would buy it. Lang Whitaker was born on the internet. He would know how to get around an IP address.
Wow.
He's doing it with a VPN from wherever he's doing it from.
You think there's a if we decipher that big post, maybe there's like a barbecue recipe within it.
Corn dog?
Oh. Cooking with Lang. With Lang.
Yeah.
He's cooking up the
stats.
He's cooking up the stats.
He's cooking the stats. Wow. Pass. The call is coming from inside the grindhouse. We got a lot of lines for this. So hopefully they stretch it out a little bit somehow.
All right. Final winner of the weekend. I want to put a button on NBA Rivals Week. What a success. Incredible. We had 11 games over 5 days. Rivals Week.
What?
Only 5 days. Tass pointed it out. He caught it. It was Tuesday to Saturday. Okay, that's fine. But listen to this. Listen to the games or the storylines that we honestly had in these rival games. We had the Heat. 3-point win over the Celtics. Really close game. Bam and Tatum putting up 30 burgers there. LeBron. He scored 40-plus against the Clippers. Now, that was a blowout win for the Clippers. But we had the whole LeBron became the only guy in NBA history to put up 40 against all 30 teams. We had the Sixers outgunning the Nets 137 to 133 on a nationally televised game.
Great one.
And we were missing some players in that, but it was really, really entertaining. We had Steph getting tossed versus the Grizzlies, but Poole hitting a game-winning layup with like a second or so to go. We had the Knicks knocking off the Celtics in overtime, probably New York's best win of the season. We had Spencer Dinwiddie leading the Mavs to a 4-point win over the Suns after Luka left that game, something like 3 minutes into it with the ankle injury. We had the Wolves getting a little revenge versus the Grizzlies there on Friday night for their playoff series. We had two MVP frontrunners battle it out on Saturday afternoon, as you talked about, in Jokic and Embiid. We had Kyrie scoring 21 of his 32 in the final 9.5 minutes to carry Brooklyn over the Knicks. He pointed out, not much of a rivalry, really. The yeah. Nets have beat the Knicks 9 straight games, but he also had a line something like, hey, if the NBA calls it a rivalry, it's a rivalry. So that's pretty funny. And then finally, we had the wild dramatics, which we're going to get to, of Saturday night between the Lakers and Celtics. That was an overtime game, too. Oh. I mean, I hit you with, like, of those 11 games, I think I just gave you 9 or 10 games. Like, there was really, like, one dud or something like that.
What? Damn, man, that hurts, bro.
Oh, the Bulls?
That hurts.
The Bulls?
Literally the one game, the one dud is Bulls versus Hornets. Mason Plumlee, 9 for 9 from the field. Honestly, the low point in the Bulls season is Mason Plumlee hitting a pull-up lefty jumper for a dagger. So, I mean, Hornets took that Rivals Week game as well. They
I guess I should have said these were nationally televised Rivals games, the one I was pointing at. I don't think that one was a marquee game, was it not?
I think it got flexed off, actually.
Did it? Yeah. they called that one correctly. Yes. Anyway,
yes,
NBA Rivals Week, unbelievable success. We were like mocking it going into it. And
sure.
In the end, we're like, these were great games and good storylines. And that obviously was fun.
I thought it was going to be a joke at the beginning of the season. NBA Rivals Week. What is this concoction? It makes no sense. It just seemed like something that they concocted. You know, I've compared it potentially to the midseason tournament. Like, it's just, what is this thing?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, here in January, when we need a little spice, it helped out.
It did.
It really did. And I think, considering it was Tuesday to Saturday, originally they probably thought, okay, Rivals Week should be a week. Should be 7 days, but then they didn't want to compete with the NFL.
On the Sunday,
So and then they said, okay, Monday to Saturday, then everybody knows that we're avoiding the NFL, so we'll make it Tuesday to Saturday. Why would it be 5 days? Just because there's not enough rivalries to fill a 7-day bracket? Maybe. I mean, they were stretching it with Knicks-Nets. Yeah, they're in the same city, but it's not a rivalry.
I think the biggest part is
Bulls-Hornets?
No,
what?
There's not usually nationally televised games on a Monday night. So it starts on Tuesday, TNT. Wednesday, ESPN. Thursday, TNT. Friday, ESPN. Saturday, we went to ABC.
What about
with some of these
rivals only, baby?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's the reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. And it worked. We loved it. You tell us, though. What did we miss for winners of the NBA weekend? Which teams, which players, whatever storylines? We're going to take our first break. When we come back, losers of the NBA weekend, where we'll get into the very controversial no call on LeBron James.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers? That's a butterfly effect for
real. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. That would make me so happy. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything, really. It really is. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can. If that's a 10-minute low-impact class, they got those. And when you're ready, take it up a gear. You know, a 30-minute live DJ ride. DJ John Michael, that guy plays the hits. He always gets me going. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or Bike Plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply.
You like the role-playing, the costumes of Halloween? Make it sexy?
Exactly, exactly. You're just seeing people...
Exactly. Tell me more.
You're seeing people dressed differently than they would.
Oh, that turns you on?
Yeah. Okay. I'm like, what? That person never dresses like a cowboy. They're never tucking in their shirt and putting on a big old brass belt buckle.
Yeah.
I've never seen that woman dressed like Lil Bo Peep before.
It's a spark.
There's a big spark. And then, I mean, I think Leap Day is obvious why that's a sexy one.
Because totally. It only comes around
once every four years.
Yeah, yeah.
No rules.
Oh, there's no rules on
you can do anything on Leap Day, and it doesn't count because people forget about it for the next 4 years. They're like, what we do last Leap Day? Eh. Who can even remember?
Yeah.
Let it go.
It's always fascinated
dressed
by people.
As Little Bo Peep and Cowboy, maybe.
Always fascinated by people that were born on a Leap Day.
Fontigo Cummings.
Is that true?
You know he thinks it's sexy.
Yeah. His last name's Cummings. Yeah, hell yeah. All right. Losers of the NBA weekend. Look, we maybe could have started with this, but we had so many good winners. But Tass, let's get into it.
I like where we put it.
Okay.
Like, listen, a loser is definitely the NBA referees as a whole. Not because of the call, but let's get to the call. LeBron, at the end of a big rivals game, has a chance to win the thing at the end of regulation. Tie game, he goes to the rim, gets all the way to the rim, and Jason Tatum smacks his wrist. No call.
Right.
Whoa, the drama. LeBron gets to his knees. Patrick Beverley, before overtime happens, brings out a camera from one of the photographers to show the referee, which is great. That's going down in NBA history. It is hilarious. But they missed
the
call.
Got a tech for it, yeah.
Yeah, that's not good for the Lakers. Points on the board, yeah. They lose the game. Listen, NBA referees miss calls all the time. I like how we don't have video reviews for every stinking call the last 2 minutes. They've changed that. That's great. I'm not upset about them missing a very egregious call. It was very, very obvious they missed it. But I'm upset on Sunday. They come out with this tweet the National Basketball Referees Association tweets, like everyone else, referees make mistakes. We made one at the end of last night's game, and that is gut-wrenching for us. This play will weigh heavily and cause sleepless nights as we strive to be the best referees we can be. I hate this.
Were they trolling?
No.
This is a sincere tweet?
There was also...
too sincere.
I think... Okay.
It's too much. There's also a link to the Washington Post article about the game. I hate it. Yeah. Referees can't have feelings. I want them to be robots. And I honestly don't want them to have opinions. I don't want them to talk. You know, I just don't like it. There's just the quieter the referees are. That's the profession. That's the way it should be. I don't like this having a personality on Twitter. I know everybody needs to have a personality, but the National Basketball Referees Association does not. They don't need to have. I don't get it. I don't get it. It doesn't make any sense. You miss calls. That's totally true. The last 2 minutes report, I know we make fun of it because it often has a lot of missed calls, but at least that's emotionless. I mean, it's just stating the point that is there because of the Tim Donaghy situation in the past, just to
some transparency,
you know, just to prove that we are being this organization that is trying to do our jobs, and that's it. And that's where it should end. I don't like this emotion crap. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. So that's it. I mean,
well, I don't
simple
like this,
as that.
This as you're putting it, emotion crap from this tweet. This just keep that tweet up. Schedule that tweet.
Yeah.
For every 24 hours, because every team gets hosed by bad calls at the end of games.
Yeah.
Probably every team this season has had a game or two or three or four where they've been screwed because of a blown call or a non-call or whatever. But they're apologizing, it feels like, because it's LeBron.
Duh.
On a marquee Saturday night game, and he goes nuts and has all the post-game comments. And obviously we got the Pat Bev with the camera. Like, it's LeBron, so everything's a bigger story. I get that. But that's where it looks to me pathetic and, like, embarrassing.
They had the last two-minute report out before they even got to overtime for this one. They're saying, hey, the NBA has already informed the Lakers that they missed the call. And it's because it's the Lakers. And then LeBron afterwards says, I watch the league every night. I look around. This isn't happening to anybody else. It's happening literally to every team.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a Bulls fan. I can think of three guaranteed ones that I know. I'm not a Kings fan, but we do the show every day. I can think of three for the Kings just off the top of my head. This all taken away from the fact that LeBron should have made the layup. That wasn't that hard of a foul. The guy can finish through contact all the time. He's upset that he missed a pretty open lefty layup to win the game.
I mean, he took away his hand. Like, his hand was off the ball, and so it was kind of hard to finish, I think.
Look, nobody is arguing that he wasn't fouled.
He was fouled.
He absolutely
could have made it. Do
you think, I mean, this has been sort of like going around for months, if not years, because we hear it from players every once in a while, that refs need to be held more accountable for mistakes like this? Like, we've heard players say there should be fines laid on referees. Like, if that last two-minute report comes out and they've blown, you know, four or five calls in the last 2 minutes, that there should be repercussions.
Oh, you want more transparency? I think what's happening behind closed doors is they are evaluated.
Yeah.
Their calls are evaluated. But I don't want a video about why Ed Molloy is not working the NBA Finals because he had a bad regular season or whatever. I think, they don't get the best jobs if they do a bad job. And I believe in that, but if people want more transparency, I mean, yeah, sure, go for it, I guess. That wouldn't be a negative thing. But I do think there's training and there are repercussions for negative jobs done, I think. I don't know.
Playoff
games.
What
right?
about like, having an yeah, what about having an in-game ref on a monitor? Like, get rid of challenges completely and having an official there, obviously on the monitor, not on the floor like the other three, in some sort of like they can review calls immediately and stuff like that. This is like at end of games. Do you want that? Too much? Get it right? Where do you fall on that?
I'm fine with the way it is, but go ahead.
Wait a second. So you're saying that there wouldn't be an official review? Like, they would just be like, hey, we botched it?
The point is, if there was an official...
A review by an official.
And, like, look, it's happening in New Jersey. I get that to some extent. But, like, I think we cut the legs out from underneath these refs having that replay center, right? And I think that's maybe even part of the issue here if we want to get it really into it. But anyway, having a fourth ref that is there in arena watching the monitor, I mean, it's a foul. and could trigger, like, okay, it's a foul within, obviously not the entirety of the game, but within the final minute or something like that.
So basically, it's a video review.
Basically, yeah, a video review, but it's an official. They don't have to come over, do the whole thing. It's like, hey, I saw it on, you guys missed it on the floor.
I don't know, man. It sounds like a review to me. It
sounds like you're dying.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. They shouldn't botch calls on the last call. I don't know.
But they're there's human, no other way so to... they're going to. So
what, we're
going to
add another review? Another official? I mean, another human? Tass said they should be robots. He was speaking emotionally, but I thought you were going to say they should be robots. Period. Who can actually, like, see things. Because this is bad. The only reason this is an interesting story is because it's the Lakers and LeBron. Ergo, people now are putting their eyes on the referees, and every team is coming out and saying, hey, we've gotten screwed multiple times this season. Like, that tweet went out, and it's like, Kings fans are saying we got screwed, Warriors fans, Bulls fans, literally everybody. But because it's LeBron, it's stayed in the news for a couple of days. So maybe something will change going forward, but I don't know. Maybe I have no idea. What is the solution? Get the call right.
Yeah. No, I don't think you want to add video reviews, and we've talked about it. It should just be done in Secaucus. Why do you, it just takes too long for the NBA referees to come over to a board and look at it. I wouldn't add any more time. I just think it just adds time. That's what it does. And obviously you can get calls right, but we're going to be here all night. And I know the idea is here that it was LeBron. That's why it's being talked about. But it also is the biggest stage here. Saturday night, NBA rivals week, right at the end of the game. I think some NBA fan bases can take solace in thinking that this is sort of a tweet for the first 4 months of the season, because they have been getting killed for 4 months. And I think the NBA referees are also apologizing in a way for the first 4 months of getting destroyed. Because in this season, more than any other NBA season, from week to week and month to month, we have been talking about the last minute calls and them getting it wrong. So I think it's part of it as well. Even though they said they're emotionally scarred by this one incident, I think it's death by a thousand cuts here, tweet by a thousand calls that they've gotten wrong. Yeah. Really,
I hesitate to do this. But in LeBron's defense, a little bit. I think after the game, not on the floor when he was like dropping to his knees and like crying like somebody had stole his lollipop. After the game, when he was making his comments about officiating, he really was pointing out, because he's been saying it for weeks now, that he doesn't think he's getting calls as much as other superstars in driving to the rim. Whether you agree with that or not, it's up to you to decide. But I think this was like this compounding factor of like, he's like, what can I do to get as many calls as guys that go to the line 10, 11, 12 times a game? Because he goes much, much less. And he says, I drive just as much. Is it because I'm not flailing? Because I'm not screaming? I think he was really, really, really frustrated that it's gotten to that point and it decided at the end of the game. That's what my gut says.
He should shoot more free throws. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. But it's not just happening to LeBron. I'll say that. And refs are bad, but these are the best refs. That's the sad thing, is that you're not going to find better basketball refs than the ones we got.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very difficult.
I think it'd be very difficult to create a robot too. Now, I'm not an engineer, but a robot to see little thing. There's a lot going on.
Out of balance charge. Stuff, sure. Goaltending stuff, probably. Sensors in the balls, stuff like that. But yeah, I'm with you. Slaps on wrist.
Robot could have saw that one. Guaranteed.
Well, that's what a robot would say. Why are you a robot?
I'm just always. I'm a robot advocate.
You're,
I know some robots, okay?
You're coughing to make it seem like you're not a robot.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's what a robot. That's how a robot would cough.
Cough, cough.
All right. Oh, now
you threw me off on that one.
Really suspect now.
Coughing with Kirby. Coughing with Lang. I mean, I don't know why I was going.
Cooking. Next winner, loser.
Keep going, yeah.
The Pelicans. Yeah. They're the losers of the weekend. They lost two games over the weekend. You realize the Pelicans' losing streak is 8 straight games at this point? We talked about Sunday. They got smashed by Giannis.
Yeah.
No Zion. No Ingram. No CJ McCollum. They're playing on the second night of a back-to-back. Never led in the game. But the loss on Saturday to the Wizards, just as bad. Ingram struggled in his second game back. 22 points on 22 shots. He's obviously still trying to find his rhythm. Big game changer, though, was Jonas Valanciunas getting ejected pretty early in this one because Daniel Gafford ran wild for the Wizards after that. Washington also crushed on the glass, which maybe doesn't happen if Jonas is there boxing out. But the last time Zion played, January 2nd, the Pelicans were 23-14. One game back from first in the Western Conference, 3-11, though, since Zion went down. They're down to 8th in the Western Conference, just a game out of 11th place. And it's really their offense that's been letting them down. They're kind of middle of the pack on defense, but 28th in offense in the month of January. They're shooting way fewer free throws with Zion out, no surprise. Also shooting 33% on threes. So the easy, like, efficiency helping points, they just aren't there. Playing a ton of non-shooters, a lot of minutes, because that's who's healthy right now. After the Wizards' loss, Coach Willie Green said, "The losing streak has kind of jolted us in a negative way. We'll get back to playing our style and playing with joy, but they got to figure it out soon. They got to get Brandon Ingram going, because they play at Denver tomorrow, then they play at Dallas, then they've got the Lakers, Kings, Hawks, Cavs at home before a two-game road trip going into the All-Star break. So they've got a tough schedule coming out here. No news yet about when Zion will be back, but Brandon Ingram at least has been back in the lineup. If they can figure out some big games for him, get a little more efficiency from CJ McCollum, maybe they recover a little bit, but this has gone about as poorly as it could go with Zion going down. And this is a team that you look at and you're like, man, they're incredibly deep. Yeah. And they are, but some guys are overtaxed here, I do believe. And New Orleans is just dropping down the standings because of it.
Any thoughts on the Pels slide here? 8 games in a row. That did catch me by surprise when I saw that.
Yeah, they've been the fact is they've been shorthanded all season, really, with a lot of their guys coming in out of the lineup. They were able to weather it for a while, but then as soon as both Zion and Ingram went out and they hit a tough patch of the schedule, not only is it tough coming up, but they also just had a real tough patch. So, what is there to say other than get healthy? Let's play ball. And that's why you don't anoint them in January. We talked about them, you know, being in the one seed. Sorry, it wasn't January. In December, where they were the one seed. Yeah, the season is freaking long. That's all.
Yeah.
And so takes time. And they did it so well. They were so great at playing without one of their stars. They took turns at being out of the lineup, but then two of their stars and this tough sched. Yeah, it's combination for a bad run here, unfortunately.
Final loser of the weekend. Going to give it to the Blazers. They only played one game over the weekend. They played our Raptors, and they got spanked on Saturday night. And they had a lot of rest before this game. They hadn't played since Wednesday, and then they're playing Saturday. So you're thinking, you're going to be refreshed. You're going to be good to go. You know, the Raptors are playing a little bit better, but they're not world beaters by any means. Toronto comes in, outscored Portland 37-14 in the first quarter, and so they were playing catch-up for the rest of the game. Billups talked about it after. You know, they imposed their will against us. The Raps did. Precious Achiuwa had a great game. In the Blazers' defense, they're missing Nurk. They're missing Josh Hart, so that's two starters, and those are their two best rebounders, probably, and they got hammered on the glass. Raptors out-rebounded them 45-27. But just another bad loss here for the Blazers. Talk about the Pelicans on a slide. Same thing with Portland. They're way down there in the Western Conference standings. And we also learned over the weekend that Jeremy Grant rejected a Blazers 4-year, $112 million offer with the intent that he's going to make more in free agency. Doesn't mean he's going to leave Portland, but the idea to get more. Come the summer, I guess hypothetically, he could receive a 5-year, $233 million deal. That's not very realistic, but it's going to be more than the 4-year, of course, and probably $112 million if it is signed there with Portland. But just not good, and we're getting Jake Fisher of Yahoo Sports saying Portland has given rival teams the impression that they're open to discussing moving basically, I mean, almost anyone outside of Damian Lillard, particularly Josh Hart and Nurkic, and that they're trying to get some athleticism and some defensive-minded, you know, wing-shooting guys. So I think they almost are getting forced into being somewhat active here at the deadline to try and sort of turn the season around. If it's Hart, if it's Nurk, I feel like Portland's they almost have to do something. Is it Simons? I don't know. I mean, I wonder, would the Blazers and Raptors consider something with OG as the piece going to Portland? There's that athletic sort of plus wing shooting guy, defender guy. But we'll see.
Yeah, it's the thing is, it's going to be hard for Portland to trade a first round pick because they have this protected pick going to Chicago that it's protected like until 2028. So it makes it just confusing for how they're actually able to do it. But it feels like changes are coming for the Blazers. Like you're saying, Nurkic and Hart, you put them together, it's like $28 million. That's a decent player in return that you could find if they want to throw Simons into it as well. We're talking $50 million worth of contracts. You could at least change it up because, I mean, the Blazers just basically ran back the same team. They brought in Jeremy Grant, but this is not a different team than when it was CJ McCollum. It just happens to be Anthony Simons now. So doesn't feel like the improvement will be coming from within.
Yeah.
And they don't want to just stay clawing to get into the play-in tournament if they're going to sign Dame to this gigantic contract and he wants to stay around.
Yeah, you make a good point about, by all accounts, the Raptors, if they move off OG, want like three first-round picks, and they don't have that. They're not going to be able to do that. I mean, you could like, is Simon
three-way you're in?
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah. Get a third team involved is a possibility. Because like, yeah, are you trading OG and Kem Birch for Anthony Simons?
Gotta really like Simons.
Exactly.
Gotta really like Simons.
So probably not. Anyway, any other losers you guys want to slip in there? We hit on them all. You tell us. Mm-hmm. Tweet at us. Let us know in the stream team. Losers of the weekend. And how do you feel about the officials tweeting? How do you feel about buildings tweeting? That was controversial over the weekend.
Excuse me?
Empire State Building.
Yes, it was tweeting.
Tass. You would not have liked it because you don't like your buildings tweeting having emotions.
I don't like my buildings.
Well, if you don't like the officials as a union or as a group collective tweeting, I can't imagine you like a building tweeting.
That's different. Very different.
Okay. You like
it? Well, it depends on what they tweeted
about. Okay, look. I'm going to half-ass this story, but I believe the Empire State Building lit up, unless this was fake, green and white for the Eagles winning.
That's right.
Oh.
Even though the Eagles are in Philadelphia and they had beaten the Giants, why the hell are they lighting up green and white? And then people upset, tweeting to them, and they were like sort of clapping back at people. This building was taking no prisoners. So anyway, that's the story. I thought you would hate it.
No, maybe they were just promoting, is this good? Because we talked briefly about the Empire State Building on our most recent episode.
That. I haven't gotten to that part yet.
Briefly, about the fast pass.
Oh, yeah, we did. You're right. We did.
JD and Matt had fast passed their way through the Empire State Building once upon a time.
I did, too.
Were we all together? We could have been.
I think we were all
together. Yeah, we were.
Yeah.
It was cool, little pass we got. We skipped like 10,000 people to get up there.
Yeah. We did. That's the problem.
Well, yeah, but why? Did we have that?
Because our man, I can't remember his name. Somebody worked there. We had a meeting there, and they were like, "Hey, you want to go up?" Like, yeah, we don't want to stand in that big line. You don't have to stand in no line.
Yes.
And you know, we're like bigwigs.
I
hated myself for it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, I'm a man of the people.
Yeah, and you have the nerve to call out without even knowing Chuck Swirsky,
hey man,
whether or not he stayed in line to see the Mona Lisa, and you yourself had done that thing.
I atoned for that. I haven't eaten a hat yet. I mentioned it on Is This Good. Everybody tune into Is This Good. I went after Bieber in this one, Skeets.
Jesus. So. All right. Oh, I'm excited to listen.
After.
Okay.
Not really.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey guys, whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. No sound effects, I don't have them loaded up and I got too much going on over here. Good news guys, I finally got the notification from Shopify that the pickleball paddle I've had my eye on is back in stock.
Yes.
I have not purchased it yet. Oh. Why? Because I stink at pickleball! Got my ass handed to me yesterday.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, my God. So bad. Anyway, Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling scented soap or peddling pickleball paddles, how's that for alliteration?
Nice one.
Thank you. Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling. Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen's, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. By the way, did you know Shopify is Canadian?
No.
I did not know that.
I did not know that.
Headquarters in Ottawa.
Wow.
Homer. Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/nodunks.
Pick 'em results from Friday night. Just quickly, I had the Grizzlies in Minnesota. They were the favorites by 3.5, but Minnesota ended up winning, as I slipped in there and showed the Wolves some love. Win for you, Tess. You're 9-10. Win for you, Trey. 13-6. L for me. A brutal January. I need this January over. I'm 6-13. What's tonight's game?
Well, the Lakers are in Brooklyn, but LeBron won't be playing. He's 117 back of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, but they're playing in Madison Square Garden tomorrow night, back-to-back in New York, so I think he's picking Madison Square Garden.
You think he can score 117 points?
Yeah, let's debate that. Yeah, you know, up or down on LeBron scoring 117 in Madison Square.
That would be awesome.
Oh, it's like all part of, like, he goes to the line like 80 times. The refs are like, all right, sorry, man. We're sorry. We blew that one. Let's set the record in MSG. Every time he, like, somebody breathes on him, foul, 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 foul.
That's a conspiracy.
Yeah, sorry.
So, yeah, I mean, he's going to do it before the All-Star break, obviously, but it's not going to be in New York. The numbers work out that he looks like he's going to do it at home, I think. I think. Against OKC or against Milwaukee, more likely,
right.
Thursday night, February 9th, TNT. Anyway, some people were saying he played in overtime, and that's why he's played too many minutes, so he's got to sit this one out. That's not the case. He just wants to play in Madison Square Garden tomorrow, regardless if it's a record breaker or not. Anyways, that's not our game. Just wanted to note that.
Okay.
Toronto is going into Phoenix tonight. The two teams that probably could have traded for Kevin Durant in the offseason, facing off tonight. The Suns favored by 2.5 at home. Trey's got the Suns. Skeets and I are playing the Homer cards.
Sure.
And the pressure's off, right? At the end.
Yeah,
of the
man. Raps look good. Play it loose. And wow. No OG, too. Is he going to be moved? Suns are apparently linked to him, I think Shams was saying this morning.
Yeah.
We'll see.
We'll see about that.
This is I got to stop saying that. I said we'll see about 100 times over the last 10 podcasts. It's we'll see season. You know what I mean? Because it's the deadline. And
we'll see.
Yeah.
Time will tell.
We all make mistakes. I said appealable. Miles Turner's contract is more appealable. It's more appealing. I've been listening to a lot of court cases. You can say my case is more appealable. That's applicable.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like a Skeetsism.
In
like,
the court of law, that's a word.
You've jammed two words, appealing and likable maybe or something together.
There's a lot of apples out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of apples.
Yeah, well, you just say courts. The courts, man.
What's your favorite apple? What's your favorite apple?
Legislative branch. What's my favorite apple? Pink Lady.
I did say apple.
Oh, I thought you said apple.
No, I said apple.
Oh, okay.
Who's up first? That was well done. All right.
Honey Crisp.
That's yours?
Oh, yeah.
I love a Honey Crisp.
It's great. It took over the game. I heard there's a new Honey Crisp drop.
I saw that.
Honeys with a Z.
What? A little too sweet, maybe.
We'll see.
We'll see.
We'll see.
Let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Yeah, apologies to our listeners, just our podcast friends out there, because this is a visual. But it's, you know, you can picture it, I think, in your mind. At Claire MPLS tweeting yesterday, Kevin Hart looks like Joel Embiid's Polly Pocket. And there's a photo of Kevin Hart standing next to Joel Embiid. And you're not going to believe this. Joel Embiid, a lot bigger as a 7-foot guy than the guy that's, what is Kevin Hart, 5 feet tall, maybe?
I imagine.
He's got to be taller.
I don't think he's much taller than 5'2". He's small, man.
Okay, well, you're...
Okay, 5'2 is a...
Oh, then that means he's not even
5'2". According to celebheights.com.
He's 5 or 5'1". Okay, wow, what a pick. And it's great, you know, Embiid, like, this is a little Gandalf trickery here. He's a little closer to the camera, so it looks 10 times bigger.
I thought that that kicking net was attached to him at first. I thought that's what the tweet was about.
It's like a backpack?
Yeah, it looked like, oh,
it does, sort of.
The latest and greatest. But there's, yeah, Michael Rubin, Kevin Hart, and Joel Embiid. So Michael Rubin is towering over Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
But he's probably like a 5'10", I bet.
Not even.
I don't think Michael Rubin's 5'10".
No.
What's the average height of a man in America or the world? Is it 5'8 or something?
5'9 for sure.
Is it 5'9?
5'9.25, I think. It's definitely 5'9.
Anyway, there were a lot of funny responses, of course, to that tweet from Claire MPLS. Some really good ones. You remember Polly Pockets, though?
Oh, we got some Polly Pockets in the house.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
They're still a thing. Cool.
I think we technically have Laura's like vintage Polly Pockets, but I know they
can you explain it for someone that doesn't know what a Polly Pocket is?
Yes, please, because I'm
Polly Pocket's a teeny tiny little doll. I don't know, like a dollhouse basically. You could get a dollhouse for it, and they come with like miniature dolls, and it's like I don't know, we turned a football into a dollhouse or something. Something tiny gets turned into a dollhouse,
yes,
basically.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Like a purse or a,
In the show Pocket Power, you know.
No.
She goes from full size child to tiny child.
Like Ant-Man.
Yeah, very much like Ant-Man. The original Ant-Man is what they call her. You know, maybe she needs to crack the case of what year the quarter that went into the arcade machine was.
Oh.
Pocket time! Go in through the little
slot.
Honey,
I Shrunk the Kids.
1976.
Yeah.
Bicentennial year. Wow.
Wow, most. Polly Pocket isn't as cool sounding when you share the story.
Yeah, it's mostly just like, what if something full size was tiny?
Yeah, it's
whole show.
It's also the toy that it's like, damn, that's a choking hazard for everyone.
Yeah, choking hazard, step on it hazard.
Sure. Lose it hazard.
Lose it hazard.
Yeah.
But man, they are small. Yeah. That's the whole pitch.
I used to, you know, there it is.
Nice.
There it is. That's a teeny tiny little dollhouse.
Oh, she's
I just realized
tiny.
How mean that tweet is now. Like, these things are small.
Oh, yeah, it's like he's like a Tamagotchi. Or that's even smaller, yeah. I guess.
Maybe the girl in the photo that we're looking at is Joel Embiid's size, though. Maybe she's large.
She's a giant. It's a good point. It's all perspective. You're right, Tess. It's a normal-sized dollhouse. It's just a very large little girl.
So it sounds like Polly Pocket. Polly was doing – is there a character named Polly?
Yeah.
She was doing investigative work. Is that any relation to Penny, Inspector Gadget Penny?
I don't know.
Just
because
their names start with P and end with Y?
It's hard to tell. I'd have to check the expanded universe of Mattel toys.
Mattel.
They could be. They very well could be.
It's amazing. They're still making them. I was going to say...
Everything comes back, man.
Micro Machines still a thing? I used to love those, being tiny.
Also small. Yeah. I haven't seen Micro Machines. With a guy that talks all fast?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, great guy.
I was happy to see, it was at your house a couple weeks ago, I forget what you call them, but like spinners that you do in the battle.
Beyblades.
That's not what we called them like when I was a kid.
I don't remember what they were called.
It was called something else, I swear to God. I thought it was.
They were.
Yeah. Anyway, I was like, man, these are still around. These are great.
Battling tops, is that different? I don't know, but it's the same thing. They smash into each other and they explode. Games, man.
Yeah,
those are not good to step on either.
Oh yeah, they break all the time now. They used to be strong.
Yeah.
They used
to
never break. Now they break.
Yeah,
I've heard people talk about it.
People are talking
because they know kids are gonna break them. You just gotta buy more. Yeah.
Yeah, but they're supposed to break though.
What do you mean they're supposed to break?
I mean they're supposed to break apart in the ring, right? Like you battle them.
See, I don't remember them back in our day. Them breaking apart. It was like we went to war in that arena.
You're right.
Last top spinning. Let's go.
Yeah.
But like you're saying, like things fire off them and stuff.
I think that's the point. But our man Eshua was saying they're just cheaply made.
Yeah. That's who I was saying it. Yeah.
Everything is.
You want me to bring an arena in here?
We can battle.
Hell yeah.
Probably have one in this classic factory.
Yeah,
actually.
Probably so. Probably
this table. This table could be the Coliseum. Let's get it on.
We're a Beyblade podcast now. I love it.
Live stream some Beyblade battles.
Lean into it. I like it. All right, let's call it there. Was it a classic? You tell us. We had a fade to black. We talked about Polly Pockets.
Forgot about the fade to black. FTB.
Got into the officials. I think it was a classic. But let us know if you're a podcast listener. Leave your boys a 5-star rating and review. Coming up this Friday, in theory, 5-star fun. What did we call it?
5-star Friday.
5-star Friday.
February 5-star Friday.
There you go. So get your 5-star ratings and reviews in, and you might hear them on the Drop Podcast that TK puts together there in that fun segment. And if you are a subscriber, or excuse me, a viewer, subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube and drop us a like. We got a lot of people tuning in here on a Monday. Love to see it. So thanks for joining us live. Speaking of live, No Dunks tickets, Friday, February 17th. In Salt Lake City at the Urban Lounge. Go get them if you haven't already. That link is right below this. Whether you're listening or watching, click on it, get a ticket. Join us. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and let's do it, JD. FTB. I can't do it now. We got stuff to show.
Oh, embrace the day, people.